Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines. Brought to you by BaywayJeep.com.
Seth, he had a lot of good stuff. I loved his answer. Lengthy as it was, I loved his answer to your question about the headsets. I feel like there's about five different answers within that subset on how this search is being conducted, what he sees his role being. Really good stuff there. I think the thing that people are going to pick up on the most as far as the just quick hit headline, when we asked him if he's open for business with the third overall pick, absolutely was what he said. So those breadcrumbs that are getting dropped out there that you and I recapped in the 7:15 segment, there is a loaf of bread somewhere that says trade down from three on it.
Right there now. Is something, too. I think that my first knee-jerk reaction with stuff like that sometimes is like, well, of course, everybody knows that everybody's open to everything all the time. But I do think there is something to like kind of planting a kernel in people's minds, including other GMs or other organizations, that it just kind of starts to go to work on their subconscious and puts the Texans as a team that, you know, might be open to and freely trade that pick and to start the conversations. I think likewise, you know, one reason we wanted to ask about Laremy Tunsil was to try to get a beat on exactly, was he actually injured? What are they just saving him because they're going to trade him at some point? Sometimes teams will just flat out say like, yeah, we'll try to trade him. They did that. The Seahawks did that with Frank Clark a few years ago, and ended up getting a really good deal for Frank Clark. Maybe the deal that the Texans were going to try to get for Clowney to go to the Chiefs. Not a breadcrumb. He is very open to trading that number three overall pick. My gut tells me that he really wants to trade that number three overall pick just to get as many first round and high second round players as possible on this football team.
Yep. So that's it. You asked him about Deshaun Watson. And he didn't really close off any avenue with Deshaun Watson. Still, in the end, left it as what's best for the team. But did not say no when you asked him if there's a chance he could still be back with the Houston Texans. Obviously, the head coaching hire, it would seem outside looking in, we don't know what they're thinking behind the scenes with Deshaun. There's a chance they've moved on from Deshaun.
Yeah.
But the head coaching hire, obviously, and if Brian Flores is one of those names that's interviewed, that's still a big variable, at least outsider looking in this whole thing right now.
Yeah, it is. It's and I do think, I guess if we had a little bit more time to have chatted, I'm curious about what he's getting out of all these interviews. You know, he always talks about, is it information flow? Is that the term he uses? I think that one of the best things you have when you have a chance to interview head coach candidates is everything that you can learn from them. And that goes to the assistant coaches too. Like those guys come in, they really want a job and you can grill them for 6 hours about everything and they're going to give it to you. It's like it's like a friendly interrogation where the prisoner is motivated to just give everything up. And for a guy like Caserio, I think that goes a long way.
Yeah, no doubt. We asked him about Jack Easterby's role in the evaluation, and we'll get to all this. We'll have all this audio for you. If you missed the interview, we'll be sprinkling this in throughout the rest of the show today. This was Nick Caserio's best interview to date with us, and I say that because the feedback on the text page is off the hook right now.
It's very, very positive. Like I'd say 10 or 15 to 1 positive to negative, but because of the sports radio, I'm going to pick out one of the negative ones.
Yeah.
Because I disagree with this comment. Is it just me, or did Caserio in a very long-winded way just say that he likes to micromanage the game from the booth? I thought it was very much the opposite. You got to understand what's going on with the stuff he was talking about. Caserio was talking about, like, what is somewhat of a menial task that he's doing in the press box, identifying personnel groupings, things like that. That's all stuff that the offensive coordinator then uses to make his decision. So, and it's a hard thing to do. It's one of those tasks that I say menial, but it's really, really vital, and it's really hard to do when you're trying to figure out in a very short amount of time, okay, what personnel group does the offense, the opponent offense have out on the field? Or what personnel group does the opponent defense have out on the field? That means you got to count the number of defensive backs, number of linebackers, number of defensive linemen, or on the offensive side of the ball, figure out, wait a second, is that a wide receiver or a tight end? I can't see his jersey. And it's really crucial. But that is completely and totally in service to the offensive coordinator. So the way Caserio was describing it, I would say is the exact opposite of the question you asked about whether he's micromanaging.
Yeah, your description the other day, as a player perspective, on how crucial what he describes his role was with the Patriots and McDaniels, about what an advantage that can be to have somebody who's good at that doing that, really made me feel a lot better about all that.
Yeah, so if you imagine the situation he was talking about, he inappropriately identified the offensive personnel. Or no, he was helping the defense out. Yeah, and he identified the wrong offensive personnel for the opponent. And so the defensive coordinator has taken this information from Nick, and he's making his play call based on that. And Nick was very openly admitting he had made a mistake. So the defense gets torched because of that. But that's the kind of stuff that, as a player on the field, you're waiting for somebody to ID the personnel, then that person tells the coordinator, then the coordinator has to make a decision, and meanwhile, the offense is breaking the huddle, and you're just stuck out there, like, clueless as to what to do, because you don't even have your call yet. That's why, like, having a guy, if there's a guy that's good at it in the booth, whether he's the GM, the owner's kid, or whoever else, it's really valuable.
Payne and Pendergast with you. We just finished up with Nick Caserio. Let's go through some of these here. We've got Landry Locker was listening to the interview. Ben, do we have these here? Caserio, we'll get to these in just a second. I'm sure the interview will be up on the podcast a little bit later. Getting a lot of feedback on things here on the text page. If you want to text in, you listen to the interview, 713-572-4610 is the number to text us. We got him, Ben? We're good? Okay. Here was Nick Caserio on what he learned from firing David Culley.
Anytime you make a decision like that, it's never easy. I would say specific to David, it's always difficult to let, I would say, really good people that you develop a relationship with over the course of the year. So we made the hire last year because we felt that was the best thing for our organization at the time. In the end, it didn't work out, I would say, the way any of us would have hoped after a year. It's not one thing. It's not one particular thing. I'd say, there's multiple reasons. I'd rather not get into anything too specifically. I think there's some things generally we can discuss. But, in the end, my responsibility to the organization is to make the decisions that I feel are best for our football operation and organization as a whole. And you don't enter something and go into something on a short-term basis and think, okay, after a year, you're going to have to make a change. I think what you have to do, you have to be very purposeful throughout the year and at the end of the year. And if you get to a point where there's things where maybe you see a little bit differently, you have to have discussions about that. And ultimately, my responsibility is to make the decisions that are best for the organization. So that's what I did, and that's what we did last week.
Yeah, it's a weird thing, because in the aftermath of firing Culley, a lot of the talk had been, well, first head coaching hire, and it was a failure for Nick Caserio. And I guess technically, by the definition, it was. Yet all the same people are going, I can't wait to see them get a different head coach. Like, the hire of David Culley technically did not check enough boxes for it to be a success. And yet I like the fact that Nick Caserio recognized the mistake, and he's done this as well with other moves he's made with the roster. Shaq Lawson, Andre Roberts, guys like that, where you look at it and you go, okay, we've got a sunk cost with this thing, but the worst thing we can do is continue to chase good money, chase good money with bad money or whatever the saying is. And he made a decision and he moved on from Cully, and they're going to have a better head coach because of it this time.
Yeah, and I think one thing that he's repeated a couple times is that they thought it was the right choice at the time. And I think, if I'm hearing correctly, they still think that maybe it was the right choice at the time. I do still believe that they hired Cully, at the very least, using a different set of criteria than they would this year, because last year it was the team was A, trying to figure out what's going on with Deshaun Watson, B, was probably not going to be a good team anyway because of all the devastation that Bill O'Brien had wreaked upon the Texans roster and salary cap. So would they have stuck it out with Cully for another year is the big question. If he had handled some of the things differently, the game management, honestly, I think that sometimes Cully just flat out saying things in press conferences that he either wasn't authorized to make decisions on or that ran in contrast to things that Nick Caserio had said was probably, I'm guessing, starting to be a little bit of an issue. You know, Caserio told us that he didn't commit to whether Tyrod Taylor was going to be the starter when he came back from injury. And then a couple hours later, David Cully just flat out said, yeah, you don't lose your job to injury. You know, like there are examples of that at times through the year where there were philosophical differences that maybe cut Cully 1 year short. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I would be surprised if Cully was ever going to last more than 2 years. But I think that they did maybe have a 2 year plan more so than a 1 year plan.
You asked a great follow up to Nick laying out the firing of David Cully. This time around, is there a different set of criteria for the head coach you'll be choosing?
I think just organizationally and where we were last January, to your point, you know, we were at a different point. I'd say there's a lot of things swirling around. I think we're in a better situation, candidly, than we were last year on a lot of different levels. And I mentioned this last week. I mean, David has a lot to do with that for the stability and the consistency and the leadership that he brought to our building on a day-to-day basis. So, you know, so we'll recalibrate here. We're working through that process right now. I would say criteria, it's a very general term. And what are you looking for? There's never one particular thing that you're looking for. But I would say just where the building is, where the team is. You know, there's been a lot of turnover on the team. I think going back to the spring, you know, even when I first came on with y'all, you know, when we put the team together, we kind of understood we were going to be high volume signing team. We didn't have a lot of draft assets, so, and a lot of players were on, you know, 1 to 2 year deals, which everybody had seen. You know, the biggest commitment that we made was the Cam Johnston, you know, on a multi-year basis. So we were just trying to bring in a number of different players, give them the opportunity, field as competitive a team as possible, with the idea that maybe out of that group we would be able to maintain some of those players for next year, which in some cases, you know, we've been able to do. So we have 31, 32 players that aren't under contract for next year. So we certainly have a lot of work on the player acquisition front. But I think there's definitely, I'd say, interest league-wide interest from our own players in potentially returning. And then when you look at our draft situation and draft capital, we're in a better position today than we were a year ago. So it's not perfect. We still have a lot of work to do. We still have a long road in front of us. But I think we're moving in the right direction, and we're able to at least put a foundation in place that everybody at least has an understanding of what we're trying to accomplish and what we're trying to do. Now it's our responsibility to kind of take a next step here from, you know, year one to year two.
I'm going to translate three things. Well, I'm going to translate two things and point one thing out. The one thing I want to point out, Seth, as you pointed out, you and I talked off the air, he is using the phrase y'all a lot more. He used it answer.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like he's adapting to Texas. That's just a side comment. We feel Nick Caserio, a chameleon. He's adapting. The two translations I'm going to give you, absolutely yes, it's a different set of criteria this time around for the head coach. And two, I inherited a dumpster fire last year. I inherited a horrible, horrible, horrible situation roster-wise, salary cap-wise, draft pick-wise. Nick's not saying it that way, but I think the way he's laying it out, how much better it is now than it was a year ago, is, I think, A, accurate, and B, I think a kind of a subtle way to say, hey, man, like he even said the last time he was on with us, that he knew this would be a massive undertaking, was his exact words. So,
yeah. It's interesting. I think it's interesting how people read between
the lines.
Quick,
Seth, you're listening to KILT and KILT HD2 and Odyssey Station. Sorry, Ben. Go ahead, Seth.
It is interesting how different people, different listeners infer different things from answers or when you read between the lines. And I think it's completely and totally fair. Especially because, look, Nick gives pretty long answers, so sometimes you can, depending on which phrase you pick, you kind of glom onto that one phrase.
Yep.
But a few people mentioned that they thought that Nick was basically leading to, in the question about the coaching, that, look, they didn't necessarily have their dream list of candidates that would take the job last year. So whether that's what he meant or whether that was just the case, I think that did factor into it.
Yep.
I think even though the Texans are still not the dream destination by a long shot because of the various complications, it looks like a more manageable set of problems and issues now. Which is weird because Deshaun Watson being on the trade block and facing all these allegations certainly shouldn't seem normal, but I think people know what the worst case scenario is, yep, at least. And you can see there's a platform for moving forward without Deshaun Watson. It's just a matter of how much draft compensation do you get, even if you get none at all, how do the Texans look at his destination then?
I thought Ross Tucker gave the most commonsensical answer to why the Texans moving on from David Culley was not unfair, as some have portrayed, more national than local, I think, have portrayed it as unfair that they fired him after a year. I thought Ross Tucker saying, why aren't we looking at coaches the same way that teams look at players? Where a guy, this guy's okay at his job, he's all right, but it's our duty to upgrade and get somebody better. It's our responsibility to the fans and to the city to get somebody better. Why can't coaches be evaluated the same way? I mean, that to me, I thought was a great prism to look at the Culley thing through, which is, there are reasons, contractual. I mean, it's not as simple as, firing a sales guy at a company or an accountant and just upgrading to somebody new, but in this situation, I feel it definitely applied to David Culley, especially because you knew this wasn't going to be something long-term. Getting a lot of feedback from you guys on the interview, largely positive. It was about as candid as we've heard Nick Caserio. Coach Middlescreen on Twitter, this is the most candid and open I've heard Caserio. Genuinely sounded excited. See if you agree with this, Seth. Genuinely sounded excited about the position the Texans were in. He sounded like someone who just got out of a terrible relationship that is just happy to have that weight lifted off of him. Do you agree in terms of what maybe we were too immersed in the interview in the moment and didn't get to really kind of listen to tone and how he sounded? I mean, he sounded very upbeat, and I would imagine he's got to be upbeat being able to function like a real general manager for the first time.
Well, but he was also he started off the interview with his daughters in the car.
Yeah.
So he probably wanted his daughters to be sure that, she heard, they heard, very positive. Very positive, upbeat daddy,
yes,
on the phone at work. I was wondering, because we can kind of go back in the interview and isolate the spot when he actually dropped his daughters off.
It was right after Absolutely, when I asked him about the third overall pick.
I'd like to know what the attendant helping the kids get out of the car might have heard. Like, and if that person could, maybe draw, taken out of context, maybe they thought that he was about to announce a trade or something.
Who's your source? The crossing guard over in Memorial?
They heard 10 seconds of a snippet of a conversation.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's hit that right here. So we asked Caserio, after going through some of the breadcrumbs that he's put out there the last few days about moving off of the third overall pick, we asked him point blank, are you open for business in moving down from the third overall pick?
Absolutely. Always open for business. You never want to limit yourself. I've always been open-minded when it comes to the draft. I think every team and every individual has a different philosophy. We're not going to trade. We're always going to pick. We're not going to move. I think we're a little bit more, always have been open-minded, progressively thinking, move up and down. And it's not just move to move. And I think trades specific to the draft are always driven by A, player availability, B, where are you moving, what are you moving away from, and then C, what are you getting in return in terms of asset that potentially could fill out the rest of your team. So we're rolling up our sleeves right now going through that draft process. I'd say there's a number of good players that will be available that we think will be available. But again, we're open for business on anything. I think that's the one thing about this organization, what people I'd say around the league know about me. They're not afraid that we'll always listen and we'll always consider, and then we'll take the information in, process it, and ultimately try to make the decision that we feel is best for our team.
When it comes to being active on trade day, remember that one of the big question marks about Brian Gain was just where was all the action on game day or elsewhere? And Gain wasn't really here long enough to really for it to become a criticism. But I think that there was a question when he didn't trade at all in that first draft, the first and only draft he had.
Well, no, he had two drafts. He had 2018 and 2019 and didn't move in either of them.
With no drafts. After the first one, it was a question. After the second one, it was like, okay, what the hell's going on?
It was a cause for firing, probably, yeah.
So I think that with Caserio, it's the exact opposite. Some of that does come into – and it's always struck me as ironic that the Texans were willing to risk a tampering charge to go after a GM that they thought would make a big difference – but then go completely without a GM after that. Like, it was so important to get the right GM that you fired the one you had and you went after the one you got almost charged with tampering. You risk getting a tampering charge. But then when it didn't work out, they said, well, easy come, easy go. We'll just go without a general manager at all. But when it comes to getting trades and deals done, yeah, sure. Everybody knows Bill O'Brien, but that's different than having hung out with him at the combine, done deals with him before, all of that. Like, that you get with Caserio in his 20 plus years of experience. That's where it feels good to have an actual GM, like an actual general manager that does stuff like that. And I think when it comes to where the Texans are right now and how much of an infusion of speed and talent and athleticism they need, I think Caserio only naturally would want to he'd be very tempted to trade back and just get as many swings at the plate as possible with as many athletes as possible.
Okay, I just got the worst well actually of the day. I'm not gonna say worst well actually ever, because every day there's about 15 horrible well actuallys on the text page.
Yeah,
when I described Caserio as a chameleon, because now he's saying y'all.
Yeah,
when someone is described as a chameleon, it's not a good thing. This reptile only camos out of fear of death. Now, they did say LOL afterwards, so I will give them. They're texting tongue in cheek.
They saved ourselves with the LOL. Yeah, I'm sorry we didn't pick the appropriate lizard or skin changing animal.
That's right.
That was the. Otherwise, should we also point out that most chameleons are like 5.5 feet shorter than Nick Caserio?
Right.
Sure. Okay, great.
Nick Caserio talked about Jack Easterby's role in the evaluation of the franchise, and Seth asked, have candidates asked about Jack Easterby? We'll let you hear Nick Caserio on those topics next.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can waste another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can conquer it. I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. Any road. The steeper, the better. Because my all-new Santa Fe is available with H-Track all-wheel drive, so I can hit the trail without a worry in the world. Heck, with three rows and best-in-class rear cargo space, I can pack the whole family in with all our gear. We've got available dual wireless charging for our phones, so we'll never lose touch with civilization, and we won't lose touch with the primordial power of Mother Earth. So which is it? Waste the weekend or do something a little more epic and conquer it in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Payne and Pendergast with you, Sports Radio 610. Nick Caserio, Texans general manager, joined us in the 7 o'clock hour today. Lengthy conversation. It'll be up on the podcast, Odyssey Rewind as well. You can go find it. We'll give you the highlights, though, throughout the rest of the show. Jack Easterby is a hot topic, obviously, around here. Nick Caserio is well aware of that, as we could tell from his answers when I asked him, what was Jack Easterby's role in the overall postseason evaluation of the football operation?
Yeah, I know it's been, Jack's been a hot topic for a lot of people. You know, I'd say candidly, probably some of the criticism has been unfair. I think Jack has an important role from an operational and logistics standpoint. I mean, that's what he was brought here to do. That's his role in the football operation. You know, I've talked about this last spring. You know, anything as it pertains to making football decisions, whether it's players, contract signings, those types of things, those fall in scouting, draft analysis, those are all fall under my jurisdiction. So I would say when you look at a football operation in its entirety, it takes a number of different people. It takes a lot of people to actually make sure that it functions and operates, you know, at a good level. So I would say I have a lot of respect and appreciation for the jobs that Jack does. And you know, candidly, not a lot of people probably really understand the nuts and bolts of it. But when you actually get a chance to spend time with Jack, I mean, I think you realize it's probably not as bad as everybody makes it out to be. So I'd say from his perspective, it's always been on an operational kind of a logistics standpoint. And there's certain areas that maybe fall under his jurisdiction that, you know, we'll communicate about. And I can handle the football areas. And then, you know, if there's something that we need to talk about collectively as a whole, whether it's myself, Jack, the head coach, whomever it is, then those lines of communication are open. So I don't see that really changing going forward. It's been pretty consistent, you know, candidly, other than maybe a couple months, you know, there in whatever it was, 2020. Mm-hmm. But, you know, look, I mean, Jack's been a punching bag since he's got here. You know, some of it, I think, quite frankly, is a little bit unjust. But, I mean, everybody has an opinion, and they're certainly entitled to their opinion. But, you know, we'll just kind of keep moving forward.
As someone pointed out on the text page, he said some of it was unjust. That means some of it is just.
Well, I don't think that Caserio ever – he's never denied that everybody, himself included, make mistakes or could have done things differently.
Said it three times in that interview when he was answering your headset question.
That's something that, you know, every general manager knows that. Well, maybe not. I mean, it's something they are like, they can do no wrong. But I think there's a certain humility about the way he approaches things. Somebody had pointed out that we should have asked as a follow-up, and this is good. This is the frustrating thing about after an interview. People have really, really good suggestions, and there's no way you could do all of them, but it drives me insane that I didn't do this. We should have asked him, what are the unfair criticisms of Jack Easterby?
Yeah. We get a lot of those on here. Hey, this would have been a good follow-up. I think the main thing that I tell people is we're on a shot clock.
It's not
a one-hour podcast.
It's true. And, Sean, I always, whenever people give me those, I don't take it as a criticism. I take it as, a helpful suggestion. It is true. After any interview, if it's a good interview, if you feel good about it afterwards, usually it also means this was, 30 questions you wished you had asked.
Yeah.
So, anyway, I think that I think that a couple things that were notable about the Jack Easterby part of it was that he obviously feels the way he does about Jack Easterby, and that's going to be different than a lot of people feel about Jack Easterby for a while, maybe forever. But I did ask him whether candidates themselves are asking about Jack Easterby, since they've heard and read all these things too.
Yeah, it's a good question. And we're straight up just honest. And if they have a question or want to know, then, we mention it and bring it. And I'd say, there's a lot of folks that I would say league-wide know Jack and have a lot of respect for him. So we're not going to hide anything. We're going to be straightforward. We're going to lay it out. And because whomever comes in here, you want them to be comfortable. You don't want them to come in under some auspice of, I'm really not sure. Like, we're not going to operate that way. We're going to be straight up. We're going to be honest. We're going to tell the truth. And we're going to communicate clearly. We're not going to hide these things. So if it does come up, absolutely, we're going to address it, and we're not going to, we're not going to run from it. And if they need more clarity, or if they want to talk to Jack specifically more about something, by all means, like, that's their prerogative, and then we'll give them the opportunity to do it.
I think when it comes to that, when it comes to the questions that a candidate would have, that's one of the biggest things that coaches who know what they're doing, or prospective coaches who know what they're doing, that's one of the first things they really want to know when they're accepting a job, is what is the structure of this place? Who are the key decision makers? What is the owner like, and what is the owner's relationship like? And I think the way the Texans probably are framing it to anybody who asks about Jack Easterby or about Nick Caserio being on the headset or anything about Cal McNair, I think the Texans can make a pretty good case, or at least spin it this way, that, hey, what we have is a lot of resources for you. And that, the reason I'm on the headset as a general manager is because, I feel like I can be a resource if you need me in that capacity, but it's going to be up to you exactly how you use it. And the way Caserio explained it was, when he was on the headset in New England, it changed from year to year or from game to game, depending on where they could use him. And somebody else, when I was describing what Caserio does on the headset, somebody said, well, that sounds – I was saying some of it's kind of menial. And he said, well, a GM shouldn't be doing those menial tasks. I disagree, because I do think that a huge chunk of general managers on game day are more busy schmoozing the owner, looking fancy, wearing a suit, than they are actually working the game. And when you're on the headset the entire time,
that's a great point.
Yeah, you do get a feel for exactly how everything was going, what the concerns were. You're plugged in and dialed into exactly what's happening on the field. And I think that's more valuable both to the team and to yourself as a GM for informational purposes than it is to sit up next to the owner in the booth.
Yeah, you shouldn't, as a GM, you be in constant evaluation mode. And if you're in constant evaluation mode, you really can, if you got a headset, then you can really multitask, and you're evaluating the players, you're evaluating the sideline operation, you're evaluating decision-making, and we all see what the decisions are that are ultimately made, but Nick is able to see what the process was that led to some of these decisions. I think it's awesome, if you want to know the truth. Someone said, I think Nick's comments about people not being happy about his use of Silicon Valley examples was a shot at In the Loop.
Yeah. Do they go after the Silicon Valley talk a lot?
I think they do, yeah.
I want to speculate. Should probably go buy Bitcoin, right?
Yeah, right. Exactly. Bitcoin. Yes, I think a lot of people do. I think,
Nick doesn't want to get on the wrong side of the crypto folk. Those people are scary. You don't get on the wrong side of the crypto folk or the Elon Musk folk. It's like you're attacking Jesus Christ himself if you attack Bitcoin and or Elon Musk.
You know who one of those people is?
Who?
Tom Brady. He's one of those crypto people.
Yeah, he is. Yeah. Which is his?
I think he's crypto.com. I think he's a crypto. I'm not sure. I don't want to. I'd hate to mess up one of Tom Brady's endorsements and then cost him the endorsement. I'd take money out of his pocket. By the way, he also said Nick Caserio said he'll never be a sworn enemy of Tom Brady when you tried to bring him over to this side. That was funny.
I didn't accept that as an answer.
It was unacceptable. It was unacceptable.
And I also did. I assumed.
This is the best. Lay this out.
Okay, so Tom Brady has this book called The Four Agreements. It's his favorite book. And And I assumed that after 20 years of Tom Brady that maybe Nick had, you know, talked to Tom Brady about this book at some point. Right. And one of the reasons that I thought that was because peppered a couple times in his most recent appearances, Nick has talked about never assuming, don't assume, you shouldn't assume.
Right.
So what did I do? I assumed he was reading this book because that's that's the third major agreement in this book is don't make assumptions.
Yeah.
So I assumed that he was reading a book about not making
You've
assumptions.
You've done a horrible job of taking in that book, Seth, of making it part of your deal.
And another bit of advice I got, somebody was upset that that was our last question. This is the advice I'll give to you folks. In any human interaction, try to have your last exchange in a conversation or anything be a positive and upbeat and lighthearted one.
Yes. First and last.
Yeah, people remember the last thing. Like, if you're declining an invitation, the tendency is to say, like, I'd love to, but I can't go. Flip that around a little bit and say, I can't go, but really, I'd love to. Like, just the next time, please invite me again.
Yes.
And it kind of sticks in your – the very last thing sticks in your brain and takes on added importance.
Good advice.
So hey, I had to sneak in the lighthearted one at the end of the
Yeah, that was good. Well, and we even asked him on the way out, like, hey, what's the time frame here? Are we open-ended?
Yeah.
This I did glean from that last answer. There, I think there's going to be a ton more candidates get interviews from the Houston Texans. I don't think they're in any rush to fill this spot.
I think he's also taken advantage of the information you get from those candidates. If you think about,
no doubt.
Let's see. Look at Joe Lombardi, who they just interviewed. He's been with six different NFL teams.
Mm-hmm.
And he's probably learned a few things along the way. So, and those guys, when they come in and they're free and forthcoming with all their information, that's manna from heaven for a guy like Nick Caserio, who spent 20 years in one organization. And also, that's an organization that likes to grow guys from the ground up. So it's not like there's always this new blood coming in from the outside.
Yeah.
They'll hire outside consultants. You know, Dom Capers was a special assistant for a year or two. But you're not nearly necessarily getting, like, the broad range of opinions that you might get in another organization.
That's what we need to be looking at with some of these candidates, Seth, especially the ones that are, okay, who is this guy? Who is that guy? Why are they interviewing Hines Ward? Hines Ward can give you a ton of insight into the Steelers. You know, just he didn't coach there, but he played there for over a decade. The Jonathan Gannon interview starts to make a little more sense now. And I'm not saying he won't get the job. I'm not saying he's a bad candidate. I don't know enough about Jonathan Gannon to make an assessment on that one way or the other. There seem to be some good things about him, but he just spent 3 years as the defensive backs coach in the building with your division rival. He was with the Indianapolis Colts for 3 seasons. Are you telling me you can't walk away with 2 or 3 nuggets from grilling that guy for 4 or 5 hours in an interview that might be helpful to you in two games a year?
You know? Somebody says, I agree that a GM should or can be on the sideline, but know his place when it's game time. The field is the coach's office. Be respectful of others' roles. I think that's where it's, I think that comes down to, okay, just how do you feel about the way an organization should be structured in the NFL? Should it be strictly regimented or should it be more fluid? And one thing that's worked in New England for a long time, like, I don't have an issue with this because this isn't somebody imitating Belichick or trying to pretend that you've got Belichick's personality. That's foolhardy when that happens. This is more structurally, the Patriots do things where they try to figure out, okay, what are people good at and how can we utilize that skill? They do it with their players, and I think they do it with their coaches and their personnel people. And they also know this is a key, and this is, I think, one reason that Patriots personnel people have actually thrived when they leave New England versus the coaches. The personnel philosophy of the Patriots is very much that the personnel people need to know exactly what the coaches want and exactly what the coaches are coaching, which sounds simple and obvious, but there are a lot of places where there's a much larger disconnect between scouting and the coaches. In New England, they don't want that. So, and I agree with that philosophy. So I think that Caserio being as involved as possible and exactly what's going on the football side of things is actually a good thing for the personnel people.
Do you want to circle back in the next segment and hit his answer to your question about the headset stuff? There was some good stuff in there.
Yeah,
let's do that. Nick Caserio went into, he's been asked about being on the headset in some of the press conferences. This was as much detail as he went into. He had anecdotes about mistakes he's made in that role, what the conversations have been like with candidates about that role that he plays. This was really good stuff. Nick Caserio talking about his role on game days. We'll hit that next.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Live from the Twin Peaks studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
It's a good suggestion. Are you guys keeping a log of questions you want to ask for the future roundtable? Great interview, by the way. And Seth, question for you. Is that book any good that you are reading?
The Four Agreements?
The Four Agreements.
The one that Tom Brady recommended? You guys know, I enter any self-help book with an extreme level of skepticism because a lot of it's all just repackaged drivel. But then when I find one that I really, really like, I buy the hard copy version and I keep it forever. I'm half thinking about buying the hard copy version of The Four Agreements. So, it's pretty good.
Okay.
If you're into it, you might end up hating and despising it. It's like a little pamphlet. It's 140 pages long with a few little nuggets, and it kind of wrap it all around in a in this Native American philosophy that I can't tell whether it's true or made up. So I got to do some more research on
there
it. But
go.
It's good. So hey, Tom Brady lives by it. So
he seems to be doing good at life. Yeah.
If you get the Four Agreements and if you buy the TB12 book, You'll basically be as dominant as Tom Brady and everything.
Yep. By the way, the roundtable that the texter is referring to, if you missed our interview with Nick Caserio earlier, it'll be sprinkled throughout the day here on Sports Radio 610. We're about to get to some of it right here. At the end of the interview, he offered a roundtable with all the hosts here at 610. He mentioned for charity, too, of some sort. So I wonder if it's like a public roundtable where we hash out topics for the people. I can't wait to see what the actual the logistics of the roundtable are.
Is he going to pay us an NIL fee to do it?
Let's find out.
Can we do like a University of Texas backup offensive lineman or something? I'll get paid $40,000 to come to a roundtable.
Which host is most likely to say I'm only showing up if I get my $350 appearance fee? We have former hosts that might have pulled that stunt, but at any rate, 713-572-4610. Seth asked Nick Caserio if. You asked him about being on the headset. That's been a big topic. Nick Caserio's participation in game day being on the headset in the coach's booth.
And I specifically asked, have candidates asked about that?
Right.
Actually, a great topic. Coincidentally, and, you know, I'm in the process right now of talking to various coaches throughout the league. Matter of fact, I was talking to a coach the other day, and he had asked that question specifically, and I said I'd be more than happy to talk about it. And if you have looked at my background, which those folks that you're alluding to, Seth, obviously haven't, but when you go back and look at my background, you know, when you're in the press box for 18 of 20 years, a lot of that is just hearing the game, viewing the game, and the responsibilities, I would say, even in New England, were a little bit different. You know, 1 year I would say it was more hear the play call, write the play down, quality control. Other years it was, okay, down a distance, hash mark, defensive personnel, get that information to the offensive coordinator so they can determine, you know, what play they want to run, what they want to put in the game, you know, if it's base defense, and you have a base run called in your mind as a play caller, if you get that information and tell them, hey, it's base defense, then you might say, you know what, we can't run this run or sub run. Maybe if we're going to be in a multiple receiver grouping, we're better off throwing it. So it's just information flow back and forth. One year I was given the defensive the offensive personnel to the defensive staff. I remember vividly, I want to say it was maybe 02 or 03, we were playing the Seahawks at our place, and I was given the offensive personnel, to our defensive staff, and I made a massive mistake. I told them it was either 21 or 11, and it was 20 out, so it was three receivers and two backs. We were taking the information as if it was something different. They ended up getting like a 60-yard completion or whatever it was. So, I mean, and you feel horrible, but the game happens fast. And then I would say this year it was more just listening, observing. If there were things that came up during the game that we needed to talk about situationally, then, you know, we would communicate that. So my philosophy and goal has always been to just provide information where necessary, be a resource, and be as helpful as possible, whatever that constitution is. I'm a very amenable person, very open-minded, but ultimately you just want to make sure you try to get things right during the course of the game. And candidly, there's been times when I've been wrong and I've made a lot of mistakes as well. So we all try to learn from that. So I don't think it's a big mystery. I'd say there's other people throughout the league. They have either their analytics person or somebody from their personnel department maybe doing some of the same things. I think what happens is it maybe gets a little bit magnified because of my quote-unquote title and my role. But in my mind, I don't even view – I know what my role and title is, but I don't really look at it that way. I'm a football person. I'm engaged in the game. I was very well trained with a great organization. So you're just trying to take all that information and disseminate it and use it in the most efficient way possible. So I'm never going to shy away from it. I'm always going to be straight up and tell – whoever the coach is, if they have a question, try to get some clarity. That's my job and responsibility, is to provide clarity.
Okay, Seth, three things. I want to run these by you. One, he specifically said there are coaches asking him about this. So this is a topic that guys are asking about.
That was a little bit – he says he's had conversations with people around – like when he talked about that coach that he was talking to, I got the sense that that wasn't actually a candidate.
It was more like I'm chatting with friends around the league kind of.
Yeah, but okay. I'm guessing – he didn't deny that coaches have asked about it, I suppose. I think it's a conversation they probably have.
Number
but
two –
but I wasn't 100% clear on
okay,
that.
Okay, I think that's fair. I heard some of that. Number two, and this is – me as Joe fan watching the game, not knowing that 80% of what goes on in front of me on game day, I don't see. I only see what's going on the field, is that, you know, we always end up blaming things. Like if that play he talked about against Seattle or whoever it was where he misidentified personnel,
yeah,
the person getting the blame by me, media Sean or fan Sean or the fan, is the defensive back. The safety messed up. The corner messed up.
No. Or you're upset that a defensive back or that a linebacker is covering a tight end or something.
Something like that.
When it might have been the defensive coordinator thought there were two running backs on the field in any given situation.
My layer of blame, the furthest it would get, might be with the position coach or the coordinator calling something. This tells me, like, oh my God, you mean there's another layer of blame that I've got to figure out in these things?
Yeah, and that's what it's hard to, I don't know why coaches don't go further with this. They always just get up they get in a huff and say, you guys don't understand. It's hard to make these 2-minute decisions. It is hard because unlike Madden, you have to actually move human beings. And like you're relying on multiple human beings to make different decisions. So it's a much clunkier process. It's like the difference between driving a go-kart and driving a Sherman tank. Like it's a lot more involved turning a tank around and getting it to go a different direction. And that's where Caserio being in the booth, I've always been okay with it. Because I knew the tennis or the Patriots had been doing it forever. The other is that most GMs, there are a lot of GMs that are more politician than actual football guy. They're really good at smooth talking the owner, smooth talking the right people. They're good at getting their point across, but they're not necessarily fully into the nuts and bolts of everything football. I think with Caserio, I think with a lot of the better people that come out of New England, and the personnel people that have left New England have actually done pretty well, or there are a bunch who have done pretty well. It's not like the head coaches. I think they want to know about every aspect of an organization and constantly be learning, and because it helps you inform you in your job. And I think that's where Caserio is. This notion that it's because he's some kind of a control freak has never seemed fair to me, because, like, as he just described there, a lot of what he's doing in the booth is stuff that assistant coaches or scouting assistants or whomever might do on a game day. It's just, it's all hands on deck, and he's just kind of jumping in to help out with the crew.
What you just said leads into my third point from what I listened to there, and as I'm listening to it, I'm thinking, you know, here's the thing. And I also read a tweet while Nick was talking in that cut from our colleague, co-host, Ron the Show Hughley, retweeted a link to the interview, and he said, if you miss this interview, you miss Caserio at his best. In my opinion, we got to clearly hear from him that he's Mr. Micro Nick. Don't think he can help it. Here's my thing with that. I can't take anything from the year that David Culley was the head coach as some sort of gospel that this is how it's going to be moving forward, because David Culley clearly showed he needed the help. He needed a lot of help. Even some of the help he was getting, he wasn't listening to at times. So I can't use the one season that David Culley was here and paint some sort of broad conclusion that this is how Nick Caserio is going to operate as the general manager, because I think the guy that they're going to end up getting, whoever it may be, is just going to be a whole lot more qualified to operate a sideline and operate a game plan and be tactically proficient on game day more so than David Culley.
Yeah. I do think, too, that one thing Caserio stresses almost every time I hear him talk, whether it's with us or somewhere else, it's being open to change. And I think that it's one of the ironic things about the quote-unquote Patriots way. I think that one of the most consistent thing about the New England Patriots was that they've always been very open to change, at least when Tom Brady and Nick Caserio and a few other people were there. They were very, and mostly, I'm saying that tongue in cheek, mostly it's Tom Brady. Their offense changed. There was never an actual Patriots offense, other than that their offense had the ability to change from play to play, from week to week, from year to year. They were kind of ready to adapt and move on no matter what. And I think that Culley knows this, and he tries to imbue it in everything that he does. And that includes, hey, there's a Patriots way of doing things, and there's Bill Belichick's way of doing things, but we also know that there are other ways of doing things. The Pittsburgh Steelers, for instance, have operated their organization differently than the Patriots and yet been historically way more successful than the Patriots, if you look over the course of decades. And I think that's where, with all these interviews, I don't think it's fair to just assume he's going to hire somebody from the Patriots, because I think he's genuinely trying to keep an open mind about some other candidate that maybe has attributes that he hadn't really considered that just blows him away in an interview and with some of the feedback.
Yep. 713-572-4610 if you want to get in. Got a tweet from Patrick Storm said, Nick Caserio extremely noncommittal to Tunsil's future in his interview with Sean Pendergast and Seth Payne this morning. Let's take a listen. Here was Nick Caserio when we asked him. The question we asked him was Laremy Tunsil not playing the remainder of the year? Laremy Tunsil went out after week 5, the Patriots game, and didn't play the rest of the year. It was a week-to-week question about Tunsil, and there were times where they were hopeful he would play. The initial prognosis with the injury was 4 to 6 weeks, and he wound up never playing again this season for the Texans. I asked Nick Caserio, is Laremy Tunsil just too hurt to play the rest of the season?
Yeah, I would say every situation, every player, you know, is in a different circumstances. I think, you know, the injury that he sustained, whenever it was, you know, was a legitimate injury. And as we work through the process, you know, every player has to, you know, work through some things. And in the end, you know, it didn't work out, and Laremy didn't end up playing, you know, for the duration of the season. So, again, we can't worry about what happened last year. We're going to focus on this upcoming season. To your point, Sean, we're going through kind of the evaluation of, you know, our team, where we're at. I think we have, I want to say, 45, 46 players that are currently under contract for next year, including some of the reserve future players, practice squad-ish players that we signed after the season. So, you know, we'll talk about everybody. We'll go through our team whenever we do get the head coach in place. you know, we'll probably have to bring them up to speed off to bring them up to speed about where we are from a personnel standpoint. So I would say, you know, Laramie would fall into that category just like everybody else.
All right, so there you go. Seth, that is the starting left tackle who is making top-tier tackle money that the previous general manager gave up two firsts and a second-round pick for, and he is being evaluated in the same pool as the 10 or 12 future reserve players that were signed. That was Nick Caserio saying they are open for business on Laramie Tunsil also. That's what that was.
It was certainly not the Jeff Luno list of untouchables like Kyle Tucker and whoever
close.
Else.
He got lumped in with Connor Strahan, you know, like.
Who were the untouchables? It was Altuve. It was Kyle Tucker. It was a few of the big
Kyle Tucker, Altuve.
Well, Kyle Tucker. I mean, obviously Altuve would be. That's a given. Yeah. But it was Kyle Tucker before he was.
Imagine
you know,
Bregman probably
Kyle
was on
Tucker
that list. Yeah,
and lights. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't remember Luno laying out the list of the untouchables. I just remember him never trading Kyle Tucker when everybody wanted to trade him.
Not me. Yeah. I never advocated trading Kyle Tucker. Don't fact check that, everybody.
What do you think about Tunsil just based on the current status of this team, where they're at with shuffling the deck and getting draft picks? And that answer, most importantly, that answer you just heard from Nick Caserio.
I think that this is the danger when you trade away a left tackle. Like, as we saw with Miami, it's not so simple to go out and get another left tackle. The Dolphins' offensive line, brace yourself, was worse than the Texans' offensive line this year. They were probably the worst offensive line in the league. So the team that traded away Laramie Tunsil for two first-round picks, they'll probably spend more than that in eventually finding their left tackle. So the question for the Texans is, okay, if you're going to trade away Laramie Tunsil, when are you going to replace him? And I think the easy answer is, oh, Titus Howard. I think Titus Howard is ready to play left tackle now. Maybe Charlie Heck will continue to develop and be a good right tackle, but it might be also a little bit easier to find another right tackle. I know there's always somebody that's trying to say the left tackle isn't that important anymore. Balderdash, I say.
Balderdash.
That's right. So excuse my language, kids. Wow, but
one week you've used honky-dory and balderdash. Good
job.
Yeah,
it's not as I've got some Werther's in my pocket.
23 Skidoo, yes.
It's not as important as it used to be back when everybody was taking seven-step drops all the time.
Right.
But it is still a very valuable position. And I think Titus Howard is better suited to the left side, perhaps, than the right side.
Okay. That's Seth Payne. I'm Sean Pendergast. Nick Caserio joined us earlier in the show. Seth asked him, what's the possibility of Deshaun Watson returning to the Texans? You'll hear from the Texans GM next.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.